There's a famous Buddhist story called the Parable of the Mustard Seed. It revolves around a woman named Kisa Gotami, who lived during the time of Buddha's life when he had already achieved nirvana and was traveling to impart his teachings to others. Kisa's only child, a very young son, had died. Unwilling to accept his death, she carried him from neighbor to neighbor and begged for someone to give her medicine to bring him back to life. One of her neighbors told her to go to the Buddha, located nearby, and ask him if he had a way to bring her son back to life. Bringing the body of her son with her, Kisa found the Buddha and pleaded with him to help bring her son back to life. He instructed her to go back to her village and to gather mustard seeds from the households of those who had never been touched by death. And from those mustard seeds, he promised he would create a medicine that would bring her son back to life. Relieved, she went back to her village and began asking her neighbors for mustard seeds. Now, all of her neighbors were willing to give her mustard seeds, but they all told her that their households had been touched by death. As the day became evening and then night, she was still without any of the mustard seeds that she had been instructed to collect. She realized the universality of death. And according to the Buddhist verse her story comes from, she said, "It's not just a truth for one village or town, nor is it a truth for a single family, but for every world settled by the gods and men, this indeed is what is true. Impermanence." With this new understanding, her grief was calmed. She buried her son in the forest and then returned to the Buddha. She confessed to him that she could not obtain any of the mustard seeds he had instructed her to collect because she could not find even one house that was untouched by death. So I wanted to focus this morning on healing through grief, because recently I've been counseling a number of people from the fellowship through some pretty intense grief experiences, and also because we as a community are experiencing a pretty major loss together. You are losing me as your minister, and I am losing you as my people. I thought it might be helpful for us to have a shared understanding of how grief works so we can better support ourselves and one another through it. Loss is a universal human experience. Over the course of our lives, we will experience many losses, large and small. The death of a pet in our childhood, the loss of a job or an important relationship. We might get sick and lose our health, either temporarily or permanently, or have to let go of a dream that we have long cherished. And inevitably, we will all lose people that we love to death. Grief is our body's way of processing that loss. Grief is how we digest, how we make sense of, and ultimately accept the loss that we've experienced. The amount and the intensity of the grief we experience has to do with the amount of resistance that we have to letting go of the person or the situation that we're mourning. The more attachment we have, the more intense our resistance will be to that loss. So, by a show of hands here this morning, who has experienced what you would consider a pretty major grief experience? Look around at everybody here. It is like the mustard seed story. I imagine many of you may even be experiencing grief at this moment. If you have not ever experienced an intense grief, it is almost certain that you will at some point in your life. So it can be helpful to understand what is happening when you're grieving. Now, you might be familiar with the five stages of grief as originally defined by Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, psychiatrist and visionary death and dying expert. David Kessler is a man who worked with Dr. Kubler-Ross and co-authored a couple of books with her, and since her death has further refined the five stages. Well, Towards the end of her life, Kubler-Ross regretted referring to the stages as stages, which makes them sound like they are linear and progressive, as if we start at one and go to the next and the next in an orderly fashion. But they're really more like phases that we move in and out of. Each phase may last weeks or months, but they can also last just minutes or hours as we cycle through one and then another. Each new grief that you experience is going to feel different, and each grief often triggers the memories of all of the losses that you've already had. So I think it's helpful to be reminded of these phases. So I took the following descriptions of each of the phases from Kessler's website, grief.com. Denial. So denial is usually the first phase that we enter, and it helps us to survive the loss. In this stage, the world is meaningless and overwhelming. Life makes no sense. We're in a state of shock, and often we go numb. We wonder how we can go on and if we can go on and why we should even bother going on. We try to find a way to simply just get through each day. And there is a grace in denial. It helps us to pace our feelings of grief by letting in just as much as we can handle. And then anger. Anger is a common and necessary component of the healing process. So I encourage you to be willing to feel your anger, even though it might seem endless. The more you truly feel it, the more it will begin to dissipate, and the more you'll heal. There are also many emotions under the anger, and you will get to them in time. But anger is powerful, and it can lend us a sort of strength, serving as an anchor and giving temporary structure to the nothingness of the loss. Bargaining. Before a loss, it seems like you will do anything if only your loved one would be spared. Please, God, you bargain. I will never be angry at my wife again if you'll just let her live. After a loss, bargaining may take the form of a temporary truce. What if I devote the rest of my life to doing nothing but helping others? Then can I wake up and realize that this has all just been a bad dream? We want life returned to the way it was. We want our loved one restored. We want to go back in time, find the tumor sooner, recognize the illness more quickly, stop the accident from happening, if only. After bargaining, our attention begins to move into the present, and we experience depression. Empty feelings present themselves, and grief enters our lives in a deeper level, deeper sometimes than we could have ever imagined. This depressive stage feels as though it will last forever. It's important to understand that this depression is not some sign of mental illness. It's the appropriate response to a great loss. We withdraw from life, left in a fog of intense sadness, wondering perhaps if there's any point in going on alone. When a loss fully settles in your soul, the realization that your loved one didn't get better this time and is not coming back is understandably depressing. And then acceptance. Acceptance is often confused with the notion of being okay or being all right with what has happened, and this isn't the case. Most people don't ever really feel okay or all right about the loss of a loved one. This stage, though, is about accepting the reality that our loved one is physically gone and recognizing that this new reality is the permanent reality. We will never like this reality or make it okay, but eventually we accept it. It's the new normal with which we must learn to live. We must try to live now in a world where our loved one is missing. So when I'm counseling people who have had some kind of sudden loss, I usually tell them what to expect. It's been my experience that, like most things, grief tends to come over us in waves that feel almost like contractions of the heart. And also, from my experience, there is no sense fighting it when a wave of sadness begins to close in. The best thing to do is to just experience the feelings. Allow yourself to cry and breathe through them, just like the contractions that, while agonizingly painful, ultimately bring forth a new life. I tell people that just like with giving birth, our bodies instinctively know how to grieve. It can be scary to feel such overwhelming feelings, and it may be tempting to try to intervene in the process by trying not to cry or putting on a good face for others. But you can relax and trust that your body knows how to move through that experience. And it's also helpful to remember that it won't always feel like this. The space between contractions begins to lengthen until gradually you have more happy days than sad ones. There is a natural ebb and flow to everything, like Rumi described in the poem that we heard earlier. Your grief for what you've lost lifts a mirror up to where you're bravely working. Expecting the worst, you look, and instead, here's the joyful face that you've been waiting to see. Your hand opens and closes and opens and closes. If it were always a fist or always stretched open, you would be paralyzed. Your deepest presence is in every small, contracting and expanding. The two is beautifully balanced and coordinated as bird wings. Some of us are experiencing grief right now. Some of us are feeling joyful and exuberant. Many of us are somewhere between those two states. When you are in intense grief, it can feel like a fog. Life seems unreal, and it can be extremely difficult to just function in your day-to-day life. I remember right after my father died, just going to the grocery store took so much energy. And I remember being amazed that everyone else just seemed to be going on with life as if nothing had happened. But my dad is gone. Life is never going to be the same. I was surprised when the smallest thing would cause me to burst into tears. And I always try to remember what it was like to walk around in the world with my heart just feeling so raw and tender. But now, when I'm out in the world, I try to remember that a certain percentage of people that I'm encountering are feeling like that, are in grief. And it helps me to have more compassion when a driver seems absent-minded or when someone acts grumpy with me. When we are not grieving, it's up to us to keep an eye out for those who are and offer them some of our strength and our care. This is how we as a human family care for one another. So now I'm going to invite us into a community healing ritual, taking time to acknowledge the grief that so many of you are currently feeling. In just a moment, you're going to be invited to come forward and to light one of these tea light candles from the center candle and to place it on the table here. The flame representing the love that you shared with the person that you lost or are losing. The relationship that once burned bright but is now over. Or the dream that you are having to let go. So those of you who are not experiencing grief right now will be the silent witnesses holding the others in our loving embrace. I invite you now to come forward as you are called to do so and to light a candle. Let's begin.